Good morning. It is Sunday, February 17th, 2013. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas.
And I'm Kyle Kellums. KUAF is supported by All My Treasures, a flea market and antique mall on Highway 16 East in Fayetteville, serving interior designers, collectors, and dealers for 26 years with memorabilia, antiques, furniture, and more. Open Monday through Saturday, 10 until 6, Sundays from 1 until 6 p.m., 575-0250 for more information.
Ahead on Weekend Ozarks, music with Mike Shirky and friends inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio. And the planet Pluto is discovered and then recategorized. Plus, Becca Martin Brown has what's up for your plate.
But first, it's been another busy week at the state legislature, week number 5 for the General Assembly this session. There was more action concerning guns, a voter ID bill, and changes in lottery scholarships. Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis has more in this week's Week in Review.
As we reported a few weeks ago, a bill regarding voter ID is moving through the Arkansas legislature. Arkansas voters are currently asked to show ID when voting, but a new bill approved in Senate committee Thursday would require voters to show a government-issued ID when casting a ballot. The Senate State Agencies and Governmental Affairs Committee passed the bill on a voice vote. Its sponsor, Republican Representative Brian King of Green Forest, insists there is voter fraud happening in Arkansas and says the need for the bill is a simple one.
To protect the integrity of the elections. I mean, we see an election after election here in Arkansas, you know, that they continue to say there's no voter fraud in Arkansas. Every time I've brought up a bill, they say there's no voter fraud. There's voter fraud going on.
Opponents insisted the only voter fraud involves absentee ballots, and despite the bill, those would still be an easier target for voter fraud than votes cast in person. William Elamine, who volunteers his time in Lincoln County to drive older voters to their polling places, says the bill would affect elderly in Arkansas and that fraud isn't what lawmakers should be focused on in the voting system.
The issue that is going on with election is better education for poll watchers. We need more election monitors. These are the election issues that we have, not voter ID.
Lawmakers went back and forth about the bill for about an hour and 45 minutes. One issue that may have to be worked out is funding, as there is no appropriation to pay for voter IDs for those who don't already have a government-issued ID. Senator King told reporters after the meeting that if the Secretary of State's office didn't have money to carry the cost, the bill, should it be made law, wouldn't be implemented. The bill will be taken up by the full Senate chamber tomorrow. And a proposal to set a cap on how much the state's government can grow each year headed to the full House of Representatives late this past week. The House Committee on Revenue and Taxation passed a bill that would limit growth in most of the state's annual expenditures to either 3% or the 3-year average increase to the state's gross domestic product, whichever happens to be less. The director of the state's Department of Finance and Administration told lawmakers Thursday that the proposed legislation would unconstitutionally delegate some budgetary decisions to the executive branch and jeopardize critical government services such as prisons and police. House Republican leader Representative Bruce Westerman says the bill is needed to prevent government spending from growing faster than the state's economy, and he thinks it's a good solution.
I don't see that we're ceding it to the administration. I think we're actually exercising more control and authority over the budgeting process, especially with the emergency expenditures. If there truly is an emergency, then they can come back and the legislature can agree or disagree whether we've got an emergency expenditure.
Governor Mike Beebe has said he opposes the legislation. And the Arkansas House on Friday overwhelmingly approved a bill that would let state colleges and universities decide whether to let permitted faculty and staff carry concealed handguns on campus. The House Education Committee passed Representative Charlie Collins' bill earlier this week on a voice vote. Both a college student and professor spoke for the bill. One person, a high school student, spoke against it. After the meeting, University of Arkansas at Little Rock Chancellor Joel Anderson said he and other chancellors in the state are against the bill.
There's a difference in judgment, and I understand that in the minds of some people, and people that I respect, this would make for a safer campus. And it's my judgment, and it's that of our law enforcement people on campus, as well as other presidents and chancellors, that it does not make a safer campus, that in fact it tends to do the opposite.
Collins, a Republican from Fayetteville, is the representative for District 84. Echoing the same talking point he has stood beside since introducing the bill, Collins says his bill is a preventative solution to a problem.
And the problem I'm talking about is the number of crazies and killers that select our college campuses to murder our loved ones. And this is a recurring problem. It's a frequent problem. It's not going away.
Collins amended his bill to let university boards of directors decide each year if they want to opt out of allowing concealed handguns on campus. Anderson said that amendment is a positive step for the legislation. And finally, changes are potentially on the horizon for the Arkansas Scholarship Lottery. Republican Senator Johnny Key of Mountain Home and Representative Jeremy Gilliam of Judsonia, who is also a Republican, introduced a bill earlier this week that would change the amounts awarded to students receiving the scholarship. Instead of the annual $4,500 amount currently given to students, the proposed legislation would move the system to a tiered payout scheme, where first-year students would receive $2,000 and an additional $1,000 on top of that in each successive year that they stay in school. Senator Key says that the changes are necessary to keep the scholarship program solvent.
We were on an unsustainable course that we were paying out more money than we were taking in through the lottery. The reason that we've been able to do that up to this point was because of the first 7 months of sales of the lottery tickets created about an $80 million reserve before we started awarding scholarships. That reserve has been spent down, and we had to fix the solvency issue going forward.
But not everybody is thrilled about jiggering with the scholarship lottery system. Gubernatorial candidate and former Lieutenant Governor Bill Halter was quick to respond to the potential changes to the system. Back in 2008, he was one of the loudest cheerleaders for the scholarship lottery when voters were asked to vote for creating the lottery. Halter says that the lower awards to freshmen will make it more difficult for some students to enter college, and he thinks that any changes to the system would be detrimental to attaining higher education in the state.
You know, when you go out and you vaccinate a population against a disease, if you run out of a vaccine, you don't start cutting the amount of vaccine per patient or don't start leaving people out. Instead, you go manufacture more vaccine. And it's the same principle here.
Halter didn't offer any suggestions as to how he would go about, quote, manufacturing more vaccine for the scholarship system, but we're sure to hear about his plans at some point in the next year and a half as the 2014 election draws nearer. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Timothy Dennis.
Arkansas ranks 15th in the nation in the use of out-of-school suspension for all students, and 13th in the gap between black and white students in out-of-school suspensions. A report released Thursday by Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families shows that Arkansas schools rely too heavily on such punishments, thus limiting students' opportunities to learn. The report also offers alternative methods. Jerry Derlikowski is the Director for Education Policy at Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families and the author of the report, Keeping Kids in Class, Fixing Disparities in School Discipline. I spoke with her on Friday about her report. I began by asking her why they decided to do this study.
We had been reviewing some of the national research we've been seeing, such as a report out of the U.S. Department of Education Office of Civil Rights on a disparity in suspensions, and also if you, Education Week's quality counts issue this year, where all the states look to see how they ranked. Was focused on school discipline, climate, and culture. So that and a national campaign on solutions, not suspensions, we decided to look at the data in Arkansas and see how we fared.
How was the study conducted? Are schools required to report?
Yes, the data is already reported by school districts. It's in the Arkansas State Data Center. It's accessible through their Arkansas Department of Education's website. So they all report now on incidents of discipline with all the student demographic information attached. And they also report infractions with the student demographics attached.
And the data showed that, you know, more minorities are being suspended than white students, correct?
Right. In fact, out-of-school suspensions, black students are suspended five times as much as white students, in-school suspension three times as often as white students, and corporal punishment twice as often as white students.
Five times. That's quite a lot. The higher the rate of out-of-school suspension, then the lower the graduation rates, correct? Isn't
right.
there a correlation?
The research shows that any student that is suspended, out-of-school suspension, is more likely to drop out and not graduate than any other student.
In looking at the report, and you can tell me if I'm wrong or not, but it looked like the problem lies within a few districts with a really large percentage of disparity.
You're right that a majority of the districts do a fairly good job. There are a very few districts, but some of them are very small districts, too, that have these issues. So what we found in our research was that there wasn't any consistency in which variables contributed to seeing a high rate of disparity. We looked at school size, we looked at poverty rates, we looked at high percentages of minority students, low percentages, and we didn't find any consistency, which makes us think that the problem doesn't lie with the student behavior or student demographic as much as other variables in the school setting. Perhaps even school leadership, because some districts have very good results that have similar demographics to another district with not very good results.
So what are some of the other variables? You mentioned school leadership.
Well, we looked at all of them, and there's not enough differentiation in the variable set that we have available to identify, you know, a cause. So, the national research that we've read, such as that report I mentioned from the U.S. Department of Education, it was by Lozen and Gillespie, also a report from the Council of State Governments that was conducted in Texas. They all concluded that the behavior of the students was not the issue, although their research also didn't have data adequate to pin down what might be the trigger, if you will, for disparity.
What kinds of things are kids being suspended for? I know when I was in high school, and this was not quite 15 years ago, but when I was in high school, students were given out-of-school suspension for truancy, which seems sort of counterintuitive.
And they still are in some areas, and that's one of the things that we're hoping through some attention to this, that we will reduce at least out-of-school suspensions and keep students in school and find ways to keep them learning. We don't want to lose learning time because many times these students are the ones that need that learning time the most. So the variety of reasons is very inconsistent across the state for when students get out-of-school suspension or even an in-school suspension.
What are some of your proposed solutions?
Well, with the report, we hope to begin a discussion. We want people to look at the data and see which areas of the state have been successful at reducing disparities and maybe develop some best practices and identify what some of the measures they're taking are that are helping with that and share them with other districts that are having larger amounts of disparity. We also want to encourage the use of research-based strategies such as positive behavior intervention and support systems. ASU Jonesboro has a program that they're providing that helps support schools that are moving to that system of behavior management. We're looking at schools that have restorative justice practices where students have meet with a student council in a way to help identify when they've had some kind of behavior incident, other ways to restore the student to the school setting out without using suspension. So those practices do take more time and effort by the staff, but we feel their value is that value is more than compensated by the gains you get in maybe student performance and even student participation and their efforts at the school.
Well, you mentioned that it's going to take more time and effort by the staff, and you also mentioned a program at ASU, but what are there other systems of support out there for education staff?
There are a lot of programs around the state. The Department of Education itself has a grant to help with professional development in this area, and they're using it primarily for focus and priority schools, the ones with low achievement. And so there are several different groups trying to provide resources to the schools, and it will probably depend kind of case by case on what the school situation is, as to which one might be most accessible to them.
I might be backtracking a little bit, but in 2013, it is really kind of shocking that schools are still using corporal punishment. At least it's shocking to me. I can't speak for the masses, but what are some of the, you know, what are some of the solutions for stopping corporal punishment?
I think it's education of our administrative personnel. As you can see in the report, some of our largest districts with some of the heavy minority populations are the ones that don't have corporal punishment. And so those districts are finding other ways to keep order in their schools and discipline their students, keep their students engaged so the students want to be there and learning. And I think it's a matter of educating maybe some even old-time professionals that still have the outlook that, and then there's also some community values. There are some communities that feel like that's the way they want their children disciplined. So I think it's just a educational process and communities understanding that there are other ways to discipline children more productively and that will encourage the child to improve. There's probably some other ways, but those are the main ones right now.
Just some education. And some of those larger districts that reported no use of corporal punishment were like Hot Springs and Springdale and
Little Rock. And yeah, the biggest ones in the state, Rogers, they reported none in 2012.
Okay, well, what else?
I think we'd just like to ask folks to look at the report, keep an open mind. I know a lot of people are, their first assumption is if there's more black students are punished, their behavior's worse. But and maybe in a particular setting, there may be some issue that needs to be dealt with, you know, systemically some other way. But the research just does not bear that out, indicate that the behavior of black students is not worse than the behavior of white students in those states.
And if people would like to read the report?
We have a link on our webpage, arkansasadvocates.org, and they can get the report there.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Jerry.
All right. Thank you.
Jerry Derlikowski is the Director for Education Policy at Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families and author of the report, Keeping Kids in Class, Fixing Disparities in School Discipline. To view that report, go to aradvocates.org. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. Good morning. It is Sunday, February 17th, 2013. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
And joining us now is Becca Martin Brown. She is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
You missed the two times that we were trying to figure out what day it was and what month. But now that we're here.
We've got it.
Yes.
You know, though, those of you who read What's Up religiously know that every week we feature a restaurant. Something
yes.
that's new or unusual or just venerable. And every once in a while, I round some of them up for you because I'm always starving on Sunday mornings.
Who is not?
I love food.
The Wooden Spoon.
The Wooden Spoon.
The Wooden Spoon is in a big log cabin style building on Arkansas 59 in Gentry.
Okay.
The building is a pre-1870 horse barn that they dismantled and moved from Michigan about a year and a half ago.
Really? Okay.
The restaurant has been in business for about a decade, and it is the most amazing food. It's like walking into kind of a simpler time because there's these huge barn beams and a huge fireplace in the center.
Oh, wow.
And simple wooden tables, and all of the wait staff is Mennonite. There's quite a Mennonite community over there, which
yes.
I didn't know. And the food is very simple. Chicken salad sandwiches have been their big favorite ever since they opened.
This is my kind of place right here.
But I had a meatloaf sandwich the size of your head.
Safe to say this is comfort food.
This is comfort food. And save room for dessert somehow, because they have cobbler and they have pie and they have the best bread pudding I've ever eaten. And we eat it all over New Orleans.
When are they open?
Well, now there's the trick.
Uh-huh.
They're open from 10:30 to 2 weekdays.
Okay.
And from 5 to 9 on Friday evening.
That's it.
No weekends.
Is this the kind of place where you get your drink in like a mason jar?
No, you get your drink in. Well, yeah, actually kind of.
Okay.
Yeah. And I wish I could show you pictures of the bread pudding and the meatloaf sandwich. In fact, if you look in Friday's What's Up, you can see some.
Field trip?
Yes.
For the
Ozarks
Arch staff?
Let's
okay.
do it.
So midday?
All right. I'm in. Let me know
okay.
when.
All right. Wooden All right. Spoon, Highway 59, Gentry.
For chicken salad.
Yeah.
Parks Purity Pie Company.
I've heard great things about this place.
I know that Antoinette has been there and talked about it. It's the brainchild of Shannon Park Strickland, whose great-great-grandfather opened a pie business in Terre Haute, Indiana in 1925.
Mm-hmm. Side note, this is my hairdresser's sister.
Okay. Have you had pie there?
I've had pie while I was getting my hair done.
Oh,
she sold mini pies wow. at the hair club.
Okay.
Oh, what
yes.
a great plan.
It's in a trailer, correct?
It's in
one
an
of those airstreams, yes.
In what I call the Gypsy Camp on North College in Fayetteville.
Right.
I think they call it the Yacht Club. It's open from 11 to 6 Tuesday through Saturday. Their specialty is Dutch apple pie with salted caramel sauce and crumb topping made from scratch.
Wow. Okay.
All right. That's number two. Number three.
We've had a horse barn move from Michigan and an Airstream trailer. So what do you got for us next?
Number three, we have the history of Evansville, and you get food at the same time.
Where's Evansville?
It's in Washington County.
South of Lincoln.
Right.
It's a place called the Country Kitchen Cafe, pretty
uh-huh.
much in the middle of nowhere. The owner is Connie Patterson, and when she started the restaurant, she thought that it'd be nice to have some of the history of the town. Because at one time, Evansville had 5 general stores and 3 cotton gins, and the Bethlehem Cemetery down the road is one of the first public cemeteries in Washington County, 1827.
Mm-hmm.
So people started bringing her photos and stuff to put on the walls. And now it's basically a museum where you eat.
All right. This
and
is very interesting.
It's comfort food again. Hand-breaded chicken fried steak, chicken pot pie, stew, potato soup, roast beef platters, and this wonderful idea, a monster burger meal.
Mm-hmm.
It's intended to feed a family of 4 to 6.
All
it's
one
$19.95.
Burger?
You get a pound and a half of burger with all the fixins, 2 orders of fries, 2 orders of onion rings. They don't have carry out there, so you can carry this out.
So what are the hours for this?
10:30 to 8 Wednesday and Thursday, 10:30 to 9 on Friday, 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. on Saturday, and 10:30 to 2 on Sunday. They're closed Monday and Tuesday. They are also on Arkansas 59, but south of Lincoln in Evansville.
Almost to the Oklahoma border,
yes.
actually. Yeah.
So I wish you happy eating.
Gosh, those sound great. Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
This is Weekend Ozarks at Large.
The 17th of February. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
Last week, we had four beloved figures in the music scene of Northwest Arkansas inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio. The duo that is still on the hill, Donna Stierna and Kelly Mulholland, Emily Cates, mm-hmm. who is a singer-songwriter on her own right, plus a member of the band Outside the Lines, and Mike Shirky, who most people know as the host of the Pick and Post, Saturday nights from 7 to 9 on KUAF. They came together because they are going to all be principal figures in a concert on February 21st at the Fayetteville Underground.
This Thursday.
Right. And the way this concert, it's a fundraiser. Mike Shirky has, he's also a musician. He doesn't tell you that often, but he is. And he had a dulcimer he made himself more than 30 years ago. And he played it often, and musicians I know who had heard him play said it was a beautiful instrument. It was stolen from his residence late last calendar year and has vanished. And it's heartbreaking if you've been with an instrument for all that time. So the people that were here with him organize a concert, and that Thursday night concert includes, listen to this lineup, first time this lineup has ever been on the same bill. Outside the Lines with Emily Cates and her friends, Trout Fishing in America, Grammy-nominated Trout Fishing in America, the Mike Sumler Trio, worth the price of admission, and Still on the Hill. They'll all be together for one concert at the Fayetteville Underground. Now, the concert is completely sold out, and there's a waiting list. However, we did have Kelly, Donna, Emily, and Mike in the Furman Garner Performance Studio earlier this month to talk about the relationship that musicians have with their instruments and play a couple of songs as well. Mike, you made the dulcimer, and Kelly, you've made instruments.
I have, but nothing of that sort. Right. Nothing quite that fine, I'm afraid. I've dabbled.
Emily or Donna, have you ever tried your hand at making an instrument?
Well, of course, I tune and repair pianos, but
right.
But I haven't made any instrument.
I have rubber bands on a cigar box.
Okay.
I have a good guitar story. I was determined to build a guitar when I was about 20, and so I bought all the pieces to make a Martin 0021, which is a fabulous instrument, and I bought the pieces from the Martin Company, and I messed around with it for 6 months and kind of ran out of steam, put it in a box. Traveled from
this
town.
This was 100 years ago.
Yeah, 100 years ago. And, well, literally, I bet it sat in that box for 35 years.
Aging.
And yes. Exactly. I was trying to season the wood.
Yeah.
Part of my plan. And I was living across from Baird, Blaine, mm-hmm. and he's a dear friend of mine as well. And Baird said, I can put that together for you. And I realized that it's not going to happen in my lifetime. And so I turned it over to Baird, and he made me a fabulous guitar out of
wow.
those pieces.
Yeah, and I stole it from him.
And then Donna stole it, yeah. but I know where she lives.
Right. Well, I'd have to say, if you've waited 35 years to get it made, and Donna takes it, you know, you had a chance, right, before.
There's no justice in this world.
What else? Could you play us another?
Yeah, why don't we do that
sure.
whiskey?
Why don't we do whiskey before breakfast?
Okay,
yeah.
Why not?
Very appropriate song.
We're
going to
get Mike singing a little bit here, okay?
We'll do the night there, and then we'll jump into it, I guess,
yeah.
huh?
Okay.
Yep.
Well, here it goes. Well, early one morning when the sun wouldn't shine, I was walking down the road not feeling so fine. I saw two lads with a bottle between them. This was the song I heard them singing. Lord, preserve us and protect us. We've been drinking whiskey for breakfast. steps they were sitting. I couldn't believe how drunk they were getting. I said, old man, you've been sitting here long. He said, long enough, start singing this song. Lord, preserve us and protect us. We've been drinking whiskey for breakfast. Passed me the bottle and I took a little sip, and I couldn't believe how good it felt. So I took a little more, and the next thing you knew, three of us sitting there singing this tune. Lord, preserve us and protect us. We've been drinking whiskey for breakfast. Yeehaw!
What's the history of that song?
Well, the history, it's as far as I know, it's an old Irish melody, an Irish tune, but Mike Cross wrote the words. There's actually another verse toward there. He's from North Carolina, singer songwriter, funny man, all around good guy. Mike Cross is, you know. So everybody, and it got to be real popular, you know, around the country. He put the words to the song. It's funny.
I've actually heard it sung at a bar by the entire patrons on a St. Patrick's Day in North Carolina. I was in North Carolina, actually.
Songwriters like to hear that.
It was a big group sing-along. Yeah. All right, Thursday night, February 21st, 7:30.
It's going to be a fun night.
Yeah. And if it's great that Baird, who's this very talented luthier, he's making the new dulcimer. But if someone ever comes across what they think is your purloined dulcimer, you wouldn't mind having it back.
Not at all.
Pawn shops? What do you
do? They would get a concert.
Okay. No questions asked?
No questions asked.
Okay. All right. One more thing to play us out? I don't know how many you prepared, so if you don't have another one.
What about that cuckoo's nest?
Cuckoo's nest, okay.
Okay.
One,
thanks, everybody.
Thanks, Kyle.
The musicians inside the performance, the Furman Garner Performance Studio, were Donna Stierna and Kelly Mulholland from Still on the Hill, Emily Cates, and Mike Shirky. I should also point out that Baird, who they talked about in that conversation.
Threepenny Acre.
Baird Blaine from Threepenny Acre. He's the luthier who is making the new dulcimer for Mike Shirky. Again, that concert completely sold out. But I guess you could show up and if you really want to see and, you know, beg for mercy or something, but it's the 21st. Should be a great concert.
Good morning. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
And joining us now is Katie Henriksen, host of this evening's Sunday Symphony.
Good morning, guys.
Good morning. Morning. What do we have tonight?
Well, I just got in a new recording featuring Joshua Bell, who everyone knows him as a violinist. Well, he's a conductor right now. He's the music director for Academy of St. Martin in the Fields. And the new recording is him conducting Beethoven's Symphonies Number 4 and 7.
So this is brand new.
It just
new.
Came in. Wow. It just came in. And so we'll be hearing Beethoven's Symphony Number 7, conducted by Joshua Bell and played by the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields. Now, he says he has a note about why these symphonies are important to him. And he says his own journey with Beethoven started with the Seventh Symphony. And he says it's his mother's favorite, and he'd hear it on the record player when he was a kid. He says, I could listen to it over and over again. I don't even remember who was playing. And at that time, I paid no attention to whether the orchestra was getting the dotted galloping rhythm just right in the first movement or whether the conductor was taking the allegretto too slowly. I didn't worry about whether the orchestra was losing the purity by using too much vibrato or if the oboist was taking too much time in his solo. So, he thought about, he was a kid. He thought about the music's magnificence, but it makes you think about the way we process things and how when we hear things like it, as a kid, it's different than when you're the person either playing it or conducting it or whatnot.
It's been interesting to talk to either John Jeter or Paul Haas or Stephen Bias, the conductors of the area symphonies, and hear them talk about, you know, because they care very much if something has been followed and if it's going right. And I'm sure that people with a greater musical acumen than myself also care. But for me, you know, I'm not going to hear this and think, oh, well, Joshua Bell took that too far.
Right.
Yeah. Me either.
St. Martin's Academy of the Field. George Martin? Wasn't it George Martin who was the longtime conductor of that? It seemed like when I was a kid, it would always be George Martin, the same man. Okay, so that does that take up the whole show?
No, it does not. Beethoven's symphonies, they're usually not too long. So I'm pairing that with Anton Bruckner's Symphony No. 3 in D minor, which is he is one of the more expansive conductors. And this is a recording from the Vienna Philharmonic led by Bernard Haitink. So
I'm just happy that CDs still come to the station.
It's nice.
Yeah, I like
that
CDs.
That is exciting.
Yes.
I like reading. I love reading liner notes.
Thank you. When you buy something digitally, that doesn't usually happen.
You have to read it on the screen. I get tired of reading on the screen all the time. I like to read on in books or in notes and everything.
I agree.
For sure. Well, you have a busy day this afternoon, or today. I mean, Sunday Symphony, and then this afternoon you are moderating a discussion for community cinema.
Yeah, community cinema is a really exciting project. It's partnering with AETN and the Fayetteville Public Library, and once a month, people are able to see a film that's aired on PBS, and then after that, there's a panel discussion. So they invite in specialists to talk about that event, and then the audience gets to interact and ask questions too. So it's a real forum. This Sunday's is at 2 p.m. It's free, and it's featuring the film The Power Broker, Whitney Young's Fight for Civil Rights, and the panelists following that are Gordon Morgan and Calvin White. So that's definitely a really I've had fun moderating those because we have a really great audience that's really interactive, and it really turns into a discussion more than anything. It's not like you watch a documentary on PBS and you're at your house and you have all these thoughts about
right.
it, but you have no one to talk to. And this way, we're all watching it together, and then there's expert panelists, and we can all discuss it afterwards.
And it's free.
It's free.
And that starts at?
2 p.m.
At the library in the Walker Community
mm-hmm.
Room. And then tonight, Sunday Symphony.
Yes.
7 o'clock.
7 o'clock. Try to fix something in there for 5:30 or so.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you, Katie.
Friday was a big day of news from outer space. A meteorite exploded over Russia, and asteroid DA14 swept incredibly close to Earth. And more news in the coming week. Tomorrow is the anniversary of the discovery of the planet Pluto, February 18, 1930. What was the ninth in our solar system? I spoke with Robert Beauford, PhD student in space and planetary sciences at the University of Arkansas, about how and why Pluto was downgraded from a planet to a dwarf planet.
When we divided up the solar system, I say we, hundreds of years ago, when we divided up the solar system into our current way of naming things, and we only saw a few things from the ground, these few bright stars that migrated across the sky, you know. And over time, we understood that the solar system was a far more complex place and very full of stuff. And we now track, I don't know the current numbers, but a lot of near-Earth objects. And there's something like 500,000 at least significant objects that share the inner solar system orbits. At least 500,000 significant objects. I mean, multi-meter objects that share orbits with Earth and the inner solar system that are in that sort of near-Earth object zone. But there are literally millions of objects in the outer solar system out around and past Pluto. There are millions upon millions of objects in the solar system, some of which approach the size of Pluto, some of which exceed the size of Pluto. But as we understood that the solar system was a far more populated and far more complex place than our ancestors understood it to be, it became necessary to revise the way we talk about it and name things. It was either demote Pluto to a new class of object, a minor planet, or else start adding new planets on at a phenomenal rate as we discovered them.
Right, because we've discovered things that are much larger than Pluto that would constitute a planet.
Yeah, properly Dawn, the Dawn mission looking at Vesta was examining a minor planet. I mean, the asteroid Vesta was a differentiated, large, rounded body, and that was a recent mission. That the Dawn mission was circling Vesta, which is an asteroid of, I don't want to say wrong, but I'm wanting to say it was something like 600 kilometers in diameter. It's a very large object. You know, so this is, by any standard, at least a small moon-sized object.
Yeah, that sounds large.
Yeah.
Well, what about, and this is silly, but, I learned my very eager mother just ate 9 pizzas, right? So, how do you remember the planets?
Oh, well,
Yes. That's how I learned in, elementary school, how you learn the order of the planets. Well, what happens to the pizza?
Well,
I have to come up with a new saying, a new acronym or whatever. For
now, the pizza is in very good and growing company with lots and lots of other minor planet objects. And we've moved beyond even the question of an increasingly populated solar system in which we live to the point where we're starting to name planet after planet around other stars.
So we are adding planets to our solar system.
We're not only adding planets to our solar system, but beyond almost the imagination of people in other generations, we're adding planets to our galaxy. We're starting to track and name planets that are near Earth size around other stars. So not only has our own solar system grown in population by millions of objects, we are actually starting to see and name planets in the thousands around other stars that are nearby. So this is an extremely exciting time in solar system history and in planetary science history.
Do you? I know that there have been a lot of cuts to like the to NASA and you say it's an exciting time, but is there a decrease in interest in these things? And what do you?
That's an interesting question. I haven't given it much consideration. I would like to see more funding go to space science. When you look at the hard numbers, there are few things that we have ever done with tax money that have given more in tangible, measurable terms to society than our investment in space science. I mean, in economic terms as well as in benefit to the society in every front, on the whole, than our investment in NASA and our investment in space science. I don't know where the future is in that. I think that perhaps with moving past the moment when we were landing on the moon and an increasingly exciting media environment in which we're constantly stimulated by human experiences on every front, perhaps the genuine excitement of the phenomenon of human accomplishment of the exploration of space is lost in the chatter of the everyday excitement of what's happening in the world.
But, well, a very large, I mean, you know, like I have heard about the, you know, in 3 days, I have heard about that. But there are a lot of other discoveries that just, forgive me, but, for, you know, that my just missed my radar.
The Mars Curiosity rover is a good example. Yeah. That rover is one of the foremost human achievements of history.
It was all over the news.
Yes. But, you know, if you ask people what's happening with that today,
exactly.
You know, most of them have forgotten that it happened. And yet that thing is wandering around the surface of Mars with a science package on it that's the equivalent of what most universities can do in their geological program on site.
Yeah.
So this is a fundamentally great human achievement. It's a moment in human history.
But it was only exciting to the masses for a little while.
Yeah, it's just a flash in the pan of the interest cycle that people have. So, you know, I don't think that the interest or the support for the space program is waning. I think that it gets lost in the chatter.
Mm-hmm.
We're achieving more now on less money than was ever possible before, possibly because the technology has gotten so much better. We can do so much more with so much less. But that's not an excuse for underfunding the program. I mean, the program is cut again and again and again, and it's a loss to humanity. It's not just a loss to our country because it produces tangible and economic benefits, but it's a loss to humanity in that the work we do now provides the perspective from which future generations will, you know, look out to explore the universe in their own right.
Well, this is now my third story I've done on space-related things in my 2 years here. So,
really appreciate
that. That's kind of good, you know.
Thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to y'all.
Yep. Robert Beauford is a doctoral student for space and planetary sciences at the University of Arkansas. His area of expertise is astrogeology. He made an interesting discovery concerning a meteorite that exploded over California last April. We also discussed that experience. Look forward to that conversation in the weeks to come on Daily Ozarks at Large. But with the excitement of Friday's meteorite explosion over Russia, here's a preview.
Well, this thing was the size of a Volkswagen when it came into the atmosphere.
Right.
It's several tons, you know. And passing through 100 kilometers of atmosphere, and particularly that lower 30 kilometers where it starts to get dense. I mean, the thing basically burned into tiny little pieces. We've only recovered, I think, to date, about a kilo of it total, about 2.2 pounds. That's a very rough estimate. I haven't seen the current numbers. But because it's a really special meteorite, it is the single most accurate time capsule that we have of the formative moments of the solar system, this particular meteorite class. I mean, the solar system history in very brief is 4.56 billion years ago, there was a cloud of hot dust and gas that collapsed, and, you know, 99%+ of that is in the sun, and the remainder is in the planets, minus a few tiny scraps.
That's Robert Beauford, PhD student in space and planetary sciences at the U of A. He came to the station this week to discuss his discovery about a historic meteorite that exploded over California last April. Look for that discussion in the weeks to come on a daily edition of Ozarks at Large.
Your conversation about Pluto and mine, of course, the meteorite that fell to Earth in over the Ural Mountains in Russia on Friday, I thought this week we could do a montage of space-related popular culture.
I like it.
This is very eclectic. You need to know your classical music, your really bad movies, and your 1970s funk to get a complete perfect score.
Ground control to Major Tom. Ground control to Major Tom.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Columbia, this is Houston, ALS, over.
I've tucked my crew in for the long sleep, and I'll be joining them soon. In less than an hour, we'll finish our 6th month out of Cape Kennedy. 6 months in deep space. By our time, that is. According to Dr. Haslein's theory of time in a vehicle traveling nearly the speed of light, the Earth has aged nearly 700 years since we left it.
The energy breakfast drink for Earthmen.
Hello, Hal, do you read me? Do you read me, Hal?
Affirmative, Dave. I read you.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
What's the problem?
I think you know what the problem is just as well as I do.
Shower.
Interested in the future, for that is where you and I are going to spend the rest of our lives. And remember, my friend, future events such as these will affect you in the future.
If you want to see what you just heard, you can go to OzarksAtLarge.com. We have a list of all 11 of the elements of this week's montage there.
Support for KUAF comes from Walton Arts Center, presenting Hair, the musical, this Friday, the 22nd, and two performances Saturday, the 23rd. This adult-themed production depicts young Americans searching for peace and love during turbulent times. Songs include Aquarius, Let the Sun Shine In, and Good Morning, Starshine. Tickets and more information available at waltonartscenter.org or by calling 443-5600.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Jane, Missouri.
I'm familiar with Jane, Missouri.
McDonald County.
Mm-hmm. There's a Walmart there.
Yes. Yes, there is. There are Walmarts a lot of places, but yes, there is one in Jane, Missouri. Absolutely.
I don't know why that stands out, but.
Well, it's a relatively new one, and yeah. I think it does a brisk business.
And before you could buy liquor in
Arkansas County,
on Sundays.
Right. Or at all in Benton County, you would go across the line. You still can't buy liquor on Sundays in Benton County, but you can in Springdale and Tawnytown.
And Eureka Springs.
And Piatt.
Where's Piatt?
Piatt is Marion County.
Okay.
So they were one of the first communities to have Sunday sales. So there you go.
All right.
Let's see. You and I back together hosting on Thursday.
Right.
I'll do the show all by my lonesome tomorrow at noon, brand new edition of Ozarks at Large. And then Antoinette Grahave with me Tuesday and Wednesday. You and I back on Thursday.
Right. Weekend Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I am Christina Thomas.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
All right. Happy Sunday.